Good morning. You've tuned in to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. And when you are listening to this, it is Tuesday, January 14th, 2025. My name's Jack Peterson, sitting in on a Tuesday morning, acting as host, but not to worry, a familiar voice is also here in the studio. Phil Huff, the usual host of the show, is here as a guest this morning as the executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Jack. It seems unusual to be on this side of the table, so to speak.
That's right. Yeah, you can see different calendars from where you're sitting than the one we see from microphone one. And we're also joined by Mark Cochran, the board chair of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. Good morning, Mark.
Morning. It's always fun to be here and participate in this show.
It's great to have you here, and we're here on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. Well, happy anniversary, I guess, to you
thank
both.
You. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Which will, of course, we'll be talking at length, I hope, about that as we get into the show. There's plenty more to talk about going on at the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. There won't be a weather report right now at this time because, as I said, we're actually pre-recording this show. This is not a live program, so I'm not totally sure what the weather will be on the 14th. But as we're speaking right now, we're actually getting some snow that might even stick around. So the winter has finally arrived.
Well, we're hoping for snow and more snow because our winter hike season has kicked off and well underway now.
And I guess maybe that's a great place to start. Some upcoming events and especially outdoor events. The Scotchman Peaks Wilderness does not shut down in the winter months.
Wilderness is open year round, and one of the things we realized early in the life of the organization was that one way to gain community understanding and support was for people to actually experience the Scotchman Peaks and experience the wilderness, and that meant experiencing it in all of its seasons. So we started off in January 2005, and I think by March or April, we had had three or four group hikes already under our belts.
So you hit the ground running, hit the ground walking.
Hit the ground with snowshoes on that year. It was a pretty light snow year, but we did hit the ground with snowshoes and got out on the trail quite a bit. And that's a tradition that's continued on today. We've got some wonderful winter hikes coming up. As I said, we've already kicked off the season with our openers on Star Peak and Regal Creek, a couple of traditional hikes. But we have some really fun ones coming up on January 25th, hiking with kids in conjunction with the Kinnickson Land Trust and Mountain Mamas. We'll be hosting that, and then on February 8th, Dry Creek Wildlife Identification and Tracking. In February, we have a snow moon snowshoe hike. It's the snow moon month, of course, so you have to do the snowshoe hike.
Okay.
And a couple of treks to the Ross Creek Cedars, an annual outing that's led mostly women. It's not closed to men, but there are a group of women that get together quite frequently, and they sign up early, so all of these and more, sign up soon at scotchmanpeaks.org to secure your spot.
Okay. The snow moon on Wednesday, February 12th, is that, I'm guessing that's a full moon hike?
It's full or close to full.
Okay.
A number of these are actually in the Scotchman Peaks area. That one is not in the area. We wanted to make it accessible for as many people as possible, and conditions can be kind of challenging at night in the Scotchman. So. Mm-hmm. Our Thompson Falls coordinator, Julie Thompson, hosts a number of the hikes, and she's doing that in a location actually closer to Thompson Falls. So I know we have some radio listeners at least as close as Trout Creek to Thompson Falls. So there are a wide geographic area as well as topical interests.
The Dry Creek Wildlife ID and Tracking program sounds interesting as well. Is it easier or harder to track animals in the winter?
Well, it depends. It depends on the critter you're looking for, of course. But in general, tracking is much more easily done if you have a fresh layer of snow or if you have some mud. Tracking during the dry days of summer on that concrete, hard dirt or rock becomes more challenging. Not impossible, but more challenging. But the snow, a fresh layer of snow, can reveal an awful lot of overnight activity.
I've always found that. I mean, I would think that it's easier, although maybe hard harder to identify as, you know, as it melts and as mm-hmm. the as fresh snow falls on it, you don't see it. But I'm always amazed when I go out in the wintertime to see how many tracks suddenly appear. You know, some animal was walking here recently. And
that's the key question is, what went here?
Yeah.
And you can tell by the tracks, not only who or what went there, but to some degree what they were doing. You can tell if they were sauntering along, just taking in the scenery, or if they're mm-hmm. hunting something, or maybe being hunted by something.
Well, interesting information for one to have. That one is on February 8th. I'm kind of working backwards here to the one coming up next, which is hiking with kids. And that's, I suppose, if I was going to go on one, that with my current lifestyle, that's probably going to be the easiest one for me to make. Where is that?
That one also is over near mm-hmm. Thompson Falls. But okay. So you have a little bit of a drive, mm-hmm. but you would find it very family friendly for the younger kids. And that's partly why we're doing it in some of the areas that are less challenging, if you will. And with some individuals who are experienced, some mothers who are experienced with young kids, although dads can come too. We do some. We have a board member, Rebecca, who will take hiking with kids to the extreme. She'll go up Star Peak and did that a couple weeks ago now. And that attracts a fair number of families who are of the more adventurous. And the kids are maybe a bit older, into their preteens and teens.
Okay. Registration for these things, or is it required? Or?
Registration online is required, highly encouraged. We occasionally have people showing up without doing that, but they risk being turned away as spots mm-hmm. do fill up, and we have limitations in both the proposed wilderness as to how many people we can take, and as well as how many we can manage. And some of the ones, like hiking with kids, have the potential to become so large they become unmanageable. Do sign up. No cost.
ScotchmanPeaks.org.
ScotchmanPeaks.org. Look for the Hikes and Events tab. And one of the founding principles we had is we wanted our programs to be accessible to the full range of the community. And we live in communities that are very diverse in terms of backgrounds, social, mm-hmm. political, economic. To put it more bluntly, there are quite a few people who live at or below the poverty line. And we mm-hmm. want to make sure that programs are accessible to them. And that's part of the reason for doing it closer to some of the communities, so transportation's less of an issue, and cost isn't a barrier. There shouldn't be a cost to getting out into the wild.
Mm-hmm. An admirable mission. I guess the one we didn't really talk about is the Ross Creek Cedars trip, which I don't know if that's mainly a women's trip. Maybe you're not.
We have a couple of them. If uh-huh. you go online, you'll see the one in February. You can sign up and. There, like I said, are a regular coterie of women who go on that one that doesn't exclude men.
Yeah.
And then we have another one in March that's wide open to all. Ross Creek Cedars is ever popular in the winter. There's something really mm-hmm. magical about the cedars with snow falling softly and the dense cedar grove contains sound. And so everything is really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It does take a little work to get in there. The last 3 miles of the road aren't plowed. In fact, they're groomed for cross-country skiing in many years. But you can ski or snowshoe in about 3.5 miles one way, do the loop in the cedars, and you're out for the whole day for about 7.5 to 8 miles. So mm-hmm. not particularly challenging from a technical standpoint, but it does require the ability to be out all day in the cold and snowshoes or skis.
Yeah. So is that... That's a snowshoe. The organized trip is a snowshoe trip, but you can make that trip on skis if the snow is right. Somebody grooms that.
You can.
Yeah.
Most winters it does. That's a hit and miss thing. The grooming.
Mm-hmm.
All of the trails in the Scotchman's that are user friendly, we have on our hiking map, which we distribute free of charge businesses mm-hmm. throughout the community or here at the KRFY studios and Scotchman Peaks office next door.
Mm-hmm.
So some individuals like to go out to Ross Creek Cedars in particular on their own. They can pick up a map. It has driving mm-hmm. directions to the Winter Park area.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's one that's very easily followed because you're following the road in and the loop's pretty well trodden. So mm-hmm. Some of the other trails in the winter are a little more challenging to find the trailhead, and it's not mm-hmm. always certain that the snow is going to be trod down.
Yeah. Well, this is where a map becomes very handy, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can find that. Yeah, there's some out there in our kind of in our shared lobby area or shared, what do you call the top of a staircase?
Top of the staircase.
The top of the staircase, yeah.
Also, across the street at Outdoor Experience, Larson's mm-hmm. next door, Usually, Marigold Cafe used to be Tango, has map racks. Evans Brothers, to name a few here locally, that frequently carry our maps. And now I'll make sure next time I'm visiting each of them that they're stocked up.
Fresh in your mind. Yeah. Well, I feel like have we cut Mark out of the conversation here? Let's bring him in.
I'm enjoying listening to the conversation.
What's on your mind, Mark? You got some, there's some other events that aren't necessarily out in the woods, or at least one big one coming up.
Coming up pretty soon, in just a few weeks, we have the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. It's something that we've sponsored here in Sandpoint. This will be our sixth year, and it's always a great selection of films that are perfect for this community that loves the outdoors and loves outdoor-related film festivals. The theme for this year's Wild and Scenic Film Festival is Wild at Heart, and we're going to be showing it at the Panada on Friday, March 28th. And this year is going to be the first year we actually take it on the road beyond Sandpoint, and we're going to be showing the same film festival Saturday, April 5th in Thompson Falls at the Rex, and also Thursday, April 10th in Libby at the Mackey. And so you can just go to scotchmanpeaks.org to find more information on that. We don't have the final selection of films yet, but it's going to be good. It's good every year.
Who makes that selection?
a very popular committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough seat to get.
It's the committee that all of the board and staff just simply vie to get on.
Yeah.
We have our fundraising committee The film festival is put together by an outside organization, but they give us the opportunity, vast variety of films to choose from. And several of us spend a good bit of time, which is a lot of fun, previewing the films and selecting what we think is going to be perfect for this community here.
Yeah. I think we were talking about how you're expanding. You're going to Thompson Falls and Libby, but we must not have been on microphone when we had that conversation.
Well, we've been doing events in Thompson Falls and Libby and outreach for about 15 years.
But
this year, we thought for our 20th anniversary, we would take this event that's been so popular in Sandpoint and we'd take it on the road. And when we learned what the theme was going to be, it's like, well, this is just perfect. Our 20th anniversary, Wild at Heart. We simply have to do this in Thompson Falls and Libby. And as we floated the idea to the staff we have there and some volunteers, they loved it and embraced it. And so we managed to negotiate a reasonable price with the film festival to be able to do it in all three locations.
I think it is very cool to be able to get out the Scotchman Peaks, of course, is influenced by these communities, but now you're exposing you're getting into a theater. Have you guys been in the Rex Theater, for example?
We've done events at both of these over the years. We've done a variety of other films. We've done speakers, educational topics. In fact, as coincidence has it, we're also working right now on a book tour with the author Bruce Smith, who will be coming the second week of March and visiting Sandpoint, Libby, and Thompson Falls, making stops at each. Might be at different venues than these, but it's an example of the kind of programs that we do. Again, those will be free to charge for the public. He'll do public presentations in the evenings, and then we're working on relationships with some of the schools to get him into the classrooms in the afternoon to talk about his new book, the third in a trilogy of books called The Legend Keeper. About a young boy and a mountain goat who become friends and work through problems related to climate change. So it's a children's book series for the age range roughly grades 3 to 7. But I've read all three and loved it as an adult. I'd say it has a strong appeal for all ages.
Cool.
He's an excellent author. He's a longtime friend, supporter who's done – this is a pivot in his career. He's a professional wildlife biologist who's worked for – the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in Montana, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's done elk research, mountain goat research, prolific author on both of those animals. Came a number of years ago to do a keynote speech for us at our State of the Scotchmans on mountain goats, and has produced a book called Life on the Rocks about mountain goats. So the evening presentations to the adults will focus more on the Life on the Rocks, the school presentations more on the Legend Keepers, and we're really excited to bring him back. We had him a couple years ago.
That'll be cool, and I guess we'll stay tuned.
More details. We have a tentative plan, but we need to confirm with the venues to make sure. When we're doing three in a row like that, it becomes a literal jigsaw puzzle, putting all the six parts together.
But the Wild and Scenic Film Festival is set.
That's set.
For Friday, March 28th, here in Sandpoint. And I didn't write down the dates in Thompson Falls and Libby, but it's, again, I think it's so cool.
Saturday, April 5th in Thompson Falls at the Rex, and Thursday, April 10th in Libby at the Mackey.
Yeah. So neat to go to, especially these theaters, kind of in the, or at least I know where the Rex is, I think. I recognize that name. It's kind of centrally located, not unlike the Panada here.
Right on the main drag. It's about the same era, an old Art Deco theater that had its heyday back in the 30s and has been restored lovingly and is a popular place for the community to produce activities.
Yeah.
The Mackey is a similar-looking theater from the inside. It has that feeling of an old Art Deco theater playhouse. Housed inside the former auditorium for a junior high school, that school building being renovated years ago into an event center, but has a really nice feel, and it's a popular place in town. Most everybody in Libby knows where it is.
Yeah.
In fact, it has, I think, almost no signage out front. You just know where it is.
Yeah. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival, March 28th, but the upcoming date that you mentioned coming up in a couple, is that in just a couple weeks? I don't know. We'll find out more about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival and Wild at Heart as time goes by, and you'll hear about it here on these airwaves, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll be more formally launching a communications campaign about that in February.
Yeah. Let's see. What else is on the agenda for the Friends of Scotch and Peaks Wilderness?
Winter always brings forth, has for now the last 11 years, what we call our Winter Tracks program. It grew out of our four-year study, rare forest carnivore study that we did with a collection of volunteers to produce citizen science data for wolverines, marten fisher, and lynx. In fact, Mark was one of the premier teams and should chat about that in a moment. But we ended that four-year study with so much data that Idaho Department of Fish and Game said, no more. We can't do a fifth year. We are inundated with data. It'll take us 10 years to analyze it and produce reports.
Wow.
And yet we had this pent-up energy from volunteers who wanted to do more and schools we had partnered with who wanted to go out and have the experience for their students that they had during the four-year study. And so we brainstormed around that a little bit and devised what we call our Winter Tracks program and launched that a year later. It's hit its stride now with how we go about things. We take kids out for a half-day, full-day field trip in winter. We target mostly elementary schools. We've done every grade from second grade to 12th, but it seems to work best for 4th, 5th, and 6th grades. We partner with schools in each of the communities. This winter, we have 8 schools from Bonner County who are all taking part in a Winter Tracks Day. We do those at Round Lake State Park, and they get to see everything from tree identification to winter tracking, avalanche safety, how to stay found, not get lost, a wide range of things that our volunteers have expertise in with the outdoors. And then in addition to the 8 days here in Bonner County, we have another four schools in Sanders County on 3 days that we're doing, and another 4 or 5 schools in Lincoln County that we're doing on 2 or 3 days. We're finalizing one of them.
Yeah.
So this will probably end up being our busiest season ever with at least 13 schools engaged on at least 11 days.
Wow. You're talking with Sanders and Lincoln over in western Montana, are both of them, I think, adjacent to Bonner County, more or less. It reminds me once again that the Friends of Scotchman Peaks, even though headquartered here in Sandpoint, does touch, it expands. I mean, this is a huge area that is affected by.
Yeah, we have very active programming in all three counties because parts of the wilderness lie in each of the three counties or proposed wilderness. The Scotchman Peaks straddle the Idaho-Montana border for those who are new to the area or would like a geographic refresher, roughly bounded by Lightning Creek on the west side, Highway 200, Clark Fork River on the south, on the east side, the Bull River Valley, and then on the north side, the Rattle Keeler Pass for those who are outdoor folks. So about a third of it or so lies in Montana, or Idaho, rather, mm-hmm. and about two-thirds in Montana. And then the parts in Montana split about evenly between Lincoln and Sanders County.
Mm-hmm. I guess Sandpoint is the nearest kind of population center, or at least of this size, of about 10,000 people.
It's by far the largest city, if you will, in the region.
Right, yeah. And therefore, here you are. But your work includes as much, I imagine, in Montana and with folks from Montana as it does over here. Are we missing? We can circle back, of course, and talk more. Go over these dates one more time before we sign off the air. But are we missing any big events coming up?
I think for events and programs coming up, that's the biggest thing. Always put a plug in. We're right now in the early stages of planning our summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, here it is only January 14th by the time this broadcast, but we are actively putting the final touches on plans for our summer trails stewardship program because it takes a while to put all that together and then get the information out. We'll start signing up volunteers late February, early March. Right now, it looks like we'll have 18 days of activities this summer. A couple of those will be overnighters, so we'll end up with 16 projects on 18 days. One of them, at least, we're going to have a women's-only outing that we're doing in partnership. I'm not going to name names yet because we're finalizing those. But we have some exciting partnerships coming up with both a couple of women's groups, as well as a couple of colleges, universities, and a couple of the local high schools. So we try to engage people at all different levels of experience, and we get, I will call them regular volunteers who aren't associated with anything else, from a wide range of ages. But as you look around our community and the people who have time to do things, they tend to be on the retired side. So in order to engage the younger crowd, we work in partnership with the schools and other civic organizations that have those membership bases.
Yeah. Well, that is that's very cool. Thinking about summer already.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Heavy into summer planning.
Yeah. Let's see. The 20th anniversary is upon us. Before I touch, before we go all the way back to 20 years ago, I feel Phil is a well-known person here on these airwaves. Mark, you've been, of course, on the air before, but just to introduce you personally to our listeners a little bit, when did you get involved with Scotchman Peaks? How'd you come to be the board chair?
Well, I first became involved with Scotchman Peaks before I even lived in Sandpoint. I lived in Hayden, and I started dating a gal up here in Sandpoint who's now my wife and has been since 2011. And our very first date was to the Banff Mountain Film Festival at the Panada, and there was a booth there, Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, and I was well aware of Scotchman Peaks. You know, I did a lot of hiking. I'd never hiked Scotchman Peak yet, but you know, I bent the ear of the person there and decided this is an organization I want to support. And I bought a t-shirt and signed up as a friend. And then, you know, very shortly thereafter, I moved up here to Sandpoint, you know, after we got married and became involved as a volunteer. And like, for example, this isn't the only way I became involved, but I was one of the original trail ambassadors when that program started several years back. And that just kind of... you know, the natural progression was for me to become a board member, and the natural progression from that was for me to become the board chair. And I've been the board chair for about 2 years now.
I guess what is that? How involved are you in terms of like how much time do you spend working with the Scotchman Peaks, and then how much time do you get to go out and actually experience the wild Scotchmans?
Well, you know, that comes with. To answer your second question first, how much time do I get to go out and enjoy the outdoors in general? That's just part of the life balance that I have to be able to strike between work and volunteering and things like that. I spend a good bit of time as the board chair and as a member of the governance committee and the fundraising committee. With the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. And I feel it's time well spent. It's an organization that I'm very passionate about. It's a cause that I'm very passionate about. I'm not going to try to guesstimate the number of hours, but I spend a good bit of time.
Yeah.
And I like to get out, not just in the Scotchman's, but in, you know, elsewhere in the outdoors. My wife and I both were you know, outdoorsy people.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to get out as much as possible in and around work requirements and things like that.
Mm-hmm. You said something interesting. I don't know if it was interesting to me that you said you were already aware of the Scotchman Peaks to some extent, mm-hmm. even living in Hayden, not being a friend of the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness yet, just coming up to see the film festival. You already kind of had in the back of your mind that there was this. I don't know if, what was your opinion before you got involved? What did you know about the Scotchman Peaks?
I knew quite a bit about it. You know, yeah. I initially, I had lived in Idaho years ago as an undergrad student at University of Idaho, and I graduated from there in 1980 and went into the Marine Corps. And I knew right then, and always knew that I wanted to come back to North Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So retired from the Marines, went to chiropractic college, moved out to Coeur d'Alene in 2001. Ended up in Hayden. But I've always, loved the outdoors. And an organization that I joined right when I moved to Coeur d'Alene was called the Spokane Mountaineers. Got very involved with some of their organizations. You know, they sent a little booklet out all the time. And through that, I was aware of the proposed wilderness, and I was aware of the Scotchman's. And so that was why, when I first encountered the organization at that Banff Mountain Film Festival in 2008, I was immediately drawn to that display that they had there because of what I already knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the people, the kind of people who are interested in the outdoors and in mountaineering, it sounds like this, the Scotchman Peaks were not unfamiliar, even before the friends kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty well known, far beyond Sandpoint.
Yeah.
For example, when I, hike as a trail ambassador, I encounter people from literally all over the country.
Yeah.
The mark is living proof of one of the objectives we had in our first 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So just prior to Mark becoming involved, that first 4 or 5 years, we recognized that the challenge we had wasn't that the Scotchman Peaks possessed these wonderful qualities as wilderness. It was that a lot of people weren't aware that they existed,
mm-hmm.
even here locally. In other words, we had a marketing problem. And so mm-hmm. we did a lot of work just to get the word out to increase awareness. And the Spokane Mountaineers were one of the very, very first presentations that we did because there's an audience that should be receptive. And many of the Mountaineers who had been members were, of course, aware of the area.
Yeah.
But that didn't mean that all of the people that they were connected to were. And so they could be a great portal or ambassador to help get the word out. And so we very, very strategically chose a number of organizations who we knew would be able to help us in spreading the word, if you will. Essentially looked at it as a marketing problem. In mm-hmm. the earliest days, the measure was this. We very quietly spoke with a number of our local representatives, county commissioners, state representatives, other officials, about what we were doing
mm-hmm.
before we formally launched the campaign 3 or 4 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, here we are. We're going to do a flyer and a booklet in May. This was January, February. We're talking to folks.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a concert at the Panada at the end of May. We want to let you know who we are. So if you get questions from your constituents, you can call us.
Yeah.
You know, we're local people, your neighbors, your friends. So just let us know what you're hearing and if you have any questions. We're not asking you for support at this time. We just want to let you know we exist. So a very soft ask.
Mm-hmm.
One of those folks, I won't name that person, lived here all their life, west side of the county, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Went to Scotchman Peaks, scratching their head and going, now where are they?
Uh-huh.
And we went, yeah, aha. Uh-huh. We have a marketing problem.
Yeah.
You could have probably walked down the streets of Sandpoint and maybe a quarter of the people would have recognized the name.
Hmm.
And now, if you're here more than just a day or two as a visitor, you've run into something related. You've talked to a friend who said that's where you need to go hike, or you've seen a map, or you've seen a newsletter, or mm-hmm. you've seen a t-shirt or a hat. There's an association that can be made. So we attached the challenge to it of just simply getting the word out about the area exists. And then once we can do that, we can engage with, well, why is it important to save it as wilderness?
Yeah. Take us back, Phil, 20 years ago. And then some. Maybe even before the Scotchman Peak, the Friends of Scotchman Peaks formally was founded. What was kind of the lead up to that?
Yeah, the seeds uh-huh. started. The seeds uh-huh. of the Friends started uh-huh. really with forest planting that kicked off in uh-huh. 2003, and so uh-huh. a couple of years before the the Friends of the Scotchman Peaks were organized. Mm-hmm. Support for the Scotchman goes back even deeper, and I'll touch only briefly on that because it is important to know that the work that the Friends are doing is built upon advocacy work that's been done for decades. Mm-hmm. If you go back into the 1970s, when the Forest Service was looking at its lands and evaluating them for which ones would be designated as wilderness and which ones would be roadless, and going through those initial inventories to make recommendations to Congress, they went through a process called the Roadless Area Review and Evaluation. Rare 1, Rare 2 followed because Rare 1 wasn't sufficient. All that happened in the 1970s. And there were people then organizing support for the Scotchman Peaks. In fact, in 1979, during Rare 2, out of the 280 roadless areas across the nation, there were more letters in support of the Scotchman Peaks becoming a roadless area than any other place.
Huh.
That's a little known fact.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That's largely because of a small group of activists in Montana, some of whom were associated with what was then the Montana Wilderness Association, started a letter writing campaign, and they managed to generate a lot of letters, including folks from Idaho as well as Montana. But it's testimony to the power of what a few individuals can do if they start to organize. And so we aren't doing this in isolation, but fast forward to 2003 and the Forest Service is approaching revisions to their master plan, and wilderness is one of the eight topics that's going to be discussed and addressed during the revision process. Mm-hmm. A group of us were public representatives at the local district office when they were deliberating. And a few of us in that room looked at each other and went, well, wilderness isn't really getting as much conversation as some of the other seven topics. While all valid, and we're looking at forest management and grazing and fire and really important issues, wilderness was being pushed aside a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, well, this needs to be addressed. And at the same time, similar things were happening with the discussions going on in the Kootenai. The Kootenai and Idaho Panhandle were doing the same. We were doing a planned revision at the same time. And a gentleman by the name of Cesar Hernandez was attending meetings in all three locations, Sanders County, Lincoln County, Bonner County, because of his particular interest in the Scotchmans. And it was Cesar really who suggested we get together and brainstorm on how to put a small group of people in the community together to look at that. And the Scotchmans was near and dear to him, so it was a particular issue he was attached to, but it was also about that larger question of bringing wilderness support to the forest planning process.
Yeah.
So with Caesar's urging, we helped to put together a group of about 25 people from mostly Bonner County, some from Troy, some from Trout Creek and Heron, to talk about what to do next. How do we approach this? And that meeting occurred on the evening of January 14th, 2005.
Okay. That was the first meeting of what?
The first meeting of what became the Friends.
Yeah.
After that meeting, we decided, yes, we have something of a critical mass here to come together and figure out what to do about it. And then that question occupied a couple, 3 months of organizational meetings that are boring. But really by March, April, we knew we had a critical mass of what could become an organization.
Yeah. The land exists and existed at that time already as National Forest Service land, as a roadless area, but it was not, and to this day still is not, designated as a wilderness area.
It's not designated as such. Yeah. The process of wilderness, the real brief history of how wilderness has come to be in 2 minutes or less is in 1964, Congress passed and President Johnson signed the Wilderness Act, which immediately put into the National Wilderness Preservation System about 9.2 million acres in 13 areas across 11 states, mostly in the West. And it encompassed 54 areas. One of those is the Cabinet Mountain Wilderness, one of the original 1964 Wilderness Area Act. But the most important thing that act did was it prescribed a process by which additional areas would be added, not could be, but would be added to the National Wilderness Preservation System. And that process was laid out as the Forest Service and then later the BLM and Park Service and Fish and Wildlife Service were obligated to do an inventory of their lands and make recommendations to Congress. Then Congress would be the decider. And of course, the president would sign or not sign the law. But it was left up to Congress, not the president, to decide which areas would be included. That Forest Service recommendation was an important part of the process, and that gave rise to the roadless area review and evaluation. What's not recognized in all of that formally is the role of citizens' advocacy, but anyone who's worked on an issue and tried to get Congress to do something about it knows that congressmen will tend to act upon those things they think their constituents support and want and are vocal about, and they'll tend to ignore those things that they're not hearing about. It's just human nature. They're going to work on the things that they think people want them to work on. So there's a really important role in all of that for groups of local citizens on any issue, but particularly on these lands issues, to come up and say, yes, we would like this. So what was missing here, what was, in our opinion, not giving the due that needed to be received in the Forest Review Plan to reissue that recommendation, and then for Congress to act on it, what was needed then was a more vocal presence from a really wide array of people.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I guess the mission is of the Friends of Saskatchewan Peaks. Thinking back, what was your background and what was your involvement in those early days?
Sure. So my background, the bits of my background that were most important that led me to that, I went to the original forest planning meetings in part because I was a member of the Native Plant Society here locally and on the conservation committee. So I was interested in what was happening and how it impacted native plants. My eyes immediately opened up when I saw that wilderness topic because in my lifetime, I'm a wilderness nut, a wilderness user. My wife and I have hiked the lengths of the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest, and the Continental Divide Trail, and we've paddled a canoe down the entire Yukon River across Alaska. So we've seen a lot of wilderness areas, and we've seen a lot of the best management practices in those, and we've seen some of the worst management practices in those. And when we moved to North Idaho, we looked around and started experiencing what we have here and went, there are places here that are not, that are every bit as wild as anything in the lower 48. They're not being recognized as such, and they really need to fall into those best management practices, not those worst. So I had a personal motivation to pursue the issue, and I had a little time on my hands then as a volunteer, and so I thought I'd devote it to that. My business background, if you will, was 20 years in the hotel business in sales, catering, and marketing. So I immediately recognized the marketing problem from my time in the hotel business. So I was able to bring to bear some of the background I have with marketing, event planning, public speaking, in general, working with clients, which is really not that much different than working with the congressional offices.
It's an interesting background, I mean, to transition into, I guess, wilderness advocacy.
Yeah, I went in the earliest months. I went to the wilderness activist training, and I sat through a session for new people to this. And there was a PowerPoint presentation on how to lobby your congressperson. And I will tell you that the slides, the clip art from Microsoft, was very similar to the training I'd gotten. I'll leave the hotel chain's name out of it, that they went through Sales 101. Hotel Sales 101 and how to lobby a congressperson could have been almost interchangeable presentations.
Yeah. well, in those, I guess in those early days, you were putting together kind of a formal organization. And also, you mentioned hit the ground running. Yeah. That same, not long after you had that first meeting, you were already...
We gave ourselves, at the second meeting, we gave ourselves a timeline that said we're going to formally launch the campaign in May. And so we started working on a pamphlet. We started working on a booklet. We started working on an event. A media flyer, a whole arc of communications planning. So, yeah, we had a lot of work to do in 4.5 months.
Yeah. And the goal here for the Friends of Saskatchewan Peaks Wilderness is the Saskatchewan Peaks Wilderness is actually, it's the proposed Saskatchewan Peaks Wilderness. It does not exist as a formally designated wilderness area as of yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. The goal is to... correct me if I'm wrong and add what I should, add what is right, but is to create public support and interest and lobby our members or the relevant members of Congress to create a wilderness, a formal wilderness area there.
Yeah. Our overarching goal at the beginning was to achieve wilderness designation by Congress. So the area is becoming a formal wilderness designation. And we thought, looking back somewhat naively at the time, that this is so obvious a need and such an obvious pathway, and it had such strong support that 3 to 5 years will be done.
Hmm.
One bill, both states. It's just a matter of us raising the issue in the right way.
Yeah.
And of course, now in hindsight, we can see the naivete in that. Congress doesn't work that quickly, and it takes time to do these things. And so we recognized as we evolved that in order to accomplish that goal, we really had to have very strong second and third goals. And so they're not even necessarily in that order, other than you have to list them somehow. Congressional designation being goal number one. Number two is building the broad base of community support and volunteers who will work on that issue, the education and outreach. And number three is the people who really will take care of it, will do the stewardship work. And stewardship for us looks like trail maintenance so that the area stays open and accessible to hikers and equestrians. And it also looks like the wildlife education that the trail ambassadors do so that we reduce conflicts and mountain goats stay wild and hikers stay safe and those trails stay open. And it's the Winter Tracks youth education we do so that as the next generation is coming up, they have the opportunity to experience and develop the skills to experience the outdoors. And all of that leads to building the public support that's needed not only to gain designation, but then after designation, it's equally important, it's vitally important to maintain good public policy. Public policy can change unless there are a group of people dedicated to its continuance. The model for that as we evolve, we look over at the Bob Marshall Foundation that's been around since the 1940s, before the Wilderness Act, and was instrumental in helping to get the original Wilderness Act passed, which included the Bob Marshall, but continues today a very vibrant array of programs that keeps trails clear, that gets kids out into the woods, that is necessary to continue the community support in Kalispell and East Glacier and other areas for the area to maintain its wilderness character, but also really, really important for the area to achieve its ultimate utility, if you will, as a wilderness to be accessible for people. So, you know, this I think at some point I want to pivot to where the future goes for us, because I do think we'll get wilderness designation, and I hate to use a crystal ball on Congress because who knows, but I'm semi-optimistic that in 3 to 5 years we have designation on one side or the other. And this time, 20 years later, I think that 3 to 5 years might be more reasonable than it was 20 years ago. But after that, we have a strong and compelling need to continue to do those goals two and three that really shift and become goals one and two, develop the public outreach and continue to do the stewardship work. And we've been laying the groundwork for that. And perhaps would have Mark talk some about some of that groundwork.
Yeah. And Mark, well, I guess we'll turn to you. What does that look like? And also, did we miss any questions for Phil about those early days? Did we leave anything out as far as the history goes?
I don't have any questions about the history, but you might. but as far as looking towards the future, I think probably the most exciting event, other than some of the programs that we have, that's come about in the last couple of years is we've gotten an endowment established. And for listeners who might not really understand what an endowment is, what an endowment is if you make a donation to an endowment of any organization, the principal, in other words, the amount donated, is never touched. It's the interest that comes from an endowment, from the contributions into an endowment that the organization can draw on in years to come. So when you make a donation to an endowment, I like to call it a perpetual ripple, because that money is going to work for the organization year after year after year after year after year. Our endowment is established through three different foundations, and the endowment in all three foundations is officially up and running now. You know, for any endowment, you have to generate a minimum amount of money in each of the foundations for it to be officially established, and it's officially established in the Inovia Foundation, the Idaho Community Foundation, and the Montana Community Foundation. And this is the reason this is such a big step forward for us is that any credible nonprofit is going to have an endowment. All universities have an endowment. What that means is you're funded, forever, basically. And, you know, we got a lot of cash donations to get the endowment up and running. And the main effort now is to look at planned giving and legacy giving. In other words, if somebody wants to leave something behind in their will, that will, again, become a perpetual ripple. So long after somebody passes away, you know, their money, their gift is continuing to work in perpetuity. So if anybody's interested in that, the best way to donate is to go to any one of those three foundations. Again, that's the Anovia Foundation, the Idaho Community Foundation, and the Montana Community Foundation. Go to their website, and each one of those websites is going to have a specific portal for Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, and they can make a contribution through that portal. Mm-hmm. If somebody, and again, that's the best way to make a contribution. If somebody, though, wants to make a contribution directly to us, the best thing to do is to contact either Phil or me. You know, my email is mark@scotchmanpeaks.org, and Phil's is phil@scotchmanpeaks.org. Mm-hmm. And we can answer questions. You know, we could guide people through the contribution process.
Well, interesting, especially KRFY being a nonprofit as well. I have all sorts of technical questions I want to ask about that too. In other words, the future looks bright. It's pretty common for wilderness areas to have groups like this, a Friends of Wilderness Area. Is that correct? Or uncommon? Well, I don't know. I know of a few, so that's why I guess I think it's common.
It's not uncommon.
Okay.
I would stop short of saying it's common in that there are a lot of wilderness areas out there that don't have a dedicated group to them. Mm-hmm. There are some groups that take that role for maybe a regional or statewide level. Mm-hmm. But that's a really good question, and it is something of a gap when you look at how the wilderness preservation system has grown and the need really to look at questions of stewardship, both for on the ground access issues and for the future going forward. And there is a gap there. And so going back to 2010, which seems like yesterday, but it's now been 15 years, Chris Barnes, who was the assistant deputy chief in the Forest Service for Wilderness, recognized that there was a gap. And he was really instrumental in pulling together a group of people who were wilderness advocates and wilderness stewards from some of those existing groups, things like the Bob Marshall Foundation I mentioned, to look at what do we do about that. Kind of in the way that in 2005, a group of us got together and went, what do we do about this gap? So the gap he was looking at was the fact that there are a lot of wilderness areas that weren't getting that kind of support. Out of that grew something called the National Wilderness Stewardship Alliance. We're one of the founding members. And for many years, our program coordinator, Sandy, was on the board of directors. And I've been very close to the people who have been running that organization. Mm-hmm. That organization now, after 15 years, has grown to the point where they do a lot of program work to help up and coming, to help stimulate the creation of friends groups where they don't exist, and to help support the capacity of those friends groups who do, either through trainings on how to do things better, or through being a funding mechanism to be able to do trail work, trail ambassador work, education work. So they're working to fill the need of taking care of wilderness areas after they're designated.
Yeah. And that is ideally, I suppose, what you'd have the Friends of Scotchman Peaks continue to do after a wilderness designation comes through Congress. We're short on time, I guess. The big question would be, is there any big news you can share about that wilderness designation or just 3 to 5 years? Yeah. I don't know.
Wilderness designation, by the way I've described it, and anyone who's tracked our work or the general progress of wilderness, is something that does require broad community support. Mm-hmm. And so we work to do a couple of things to help move that along, one of which is looking at our own supporters. And there are programs and events are not only open to people of all different backgrounds, but we encourage people from a wide array of backgrounds in the community. Again, not just economic, but also the social, political spectrum, to not only attend, to become friends. And we have done, I think, a pretty good job of building not just the number of supporters, but that diversity of voices that will be necessary to move a wilderness bill forward. And yet alone, that's not enough. These days, the question of wilderness is, and correctly so, tied into the questions of lands management in general. So we meet in collaboration, in formal collaborations with the Panhandle Forest Collaborative in Idaho and the Kootenai Forest stakeholders in Montana to address those issues on both of the forests in a large frame view. Also in both areas, we're involved with smaller ad hoc committees, if you will, that are addressing the question of the need for public lands legislation to also do things besides wilderness. The wilderness designation would be one part of each of those. One thing we've learned over the years is that this will take two different bills, one for Idaho and one for Montana. So as you're listening to this, I should explain to listeners that our work is not divided, it's united, but we recognize we'll need two different processes, and those are in these different communities. So we have different sets of stakeholders in each. There's a lot of similarities, but there are unique community differences in each case. Without getting down into details, some of which are premature to talk about, we've made some progress in those collaborative discussions, particularly those that are in these ad hoc groups, where I think they'll bear fruit in the next few years. But these things do take time, and there is a need to address both the wilderness as well as the other components, the things that might impact mountain biking recreation or snowmobiling recreation. Recreation on our national forests has become a huge issue, but also it's important to address the needs of the communities themselves. And in some places, those may be more economic development related. They may be forestry related. And in many cases, we want to make sure that the discussion about indigenous rights and needs are brought into it. Now, those are not usually in the formal collaboratives. Those are often one-on-one as sovereign nation to sovereign nation. So the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho is going to speak with the state of Idaho and with our senator's offices, for example. But they should be and are involved, engaged in the conversation so that things are tracking in a parallel fashion. So again, these all take time. The big picture, I'm semi-optimistic. We'll see a breakthrough in one or both states in the maybe not this session of Congress, maybe the one following. So 3 years, and yeah, I think at the outset, the two sessions after that have a strong potential.
Yeah. Does it, it has to be sponsored, I'm guessing, by a representative of the state in question, or can it?
In theory, in a technical sense, a congressman from any state could sponsor a bill.
Yeah.
But it would have to have the support of the state in which it lies. And in a real world sense, that usually means they're a primary sponsor.
Right.
Even right down to the district, the senators in each state have to be engaged. But the congressmen in each district also have to be engaged.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. And we are, we're closing in on the full hour here. We can run down those dates once again. If you're, if you've been interested in this conversation, want to learn more about the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness and perhaps become a friend or just engage with the wilderness, there's a number of opportunities coming up to do it. I have the dates right here in front of me, or do you guys want to run them down? Should I? All right.
Okay, so like the biggie coming up is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. This will be our sixth year here in Sandpoint, the theme being this year, Wild at Heart. It's going to be here in Sandpoint at the Panada on Friday, March 28th. It's going to be in Thompson Falls at the Rex on Saturday, April 5th. And it's going to be in Libby at the Mackey on Thursday, April 10th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's a that's an easy lift because you can just sit down and enjoy a film.
And we always take friends online. You can go to our webpage, scotchmanpeaks.org, hit the Become a Friend button. There's no charge for becoming a friend. You can sign up for our twice a year printed newsletter or our every other week email blast on upcoming events and activities. It's easy way to become a friend. We won't spam you beyond your level of interest, and we don't share that information with anyone. You won't get spammed by anyone else.
If you want to, if you want to do something more physical, some events coming up, upcoming events and hikes on, well, that's all going to be listed on scotchmanpeaks.org. Yeah, that's an easy way to find it.
Go to the website for the upcoming hikes.
And, but you have at least two? It looks like two every month or more.
We will end up with about a total of 10 or 12 this season.
Yeah. It is a busy time, even now, at the Scotchman Peaks. Any requests for the last for the music that we go out on, or we'll just say something appropriate we'll play next?
I always love a little Walkin' Jim Stoltz. I know there's some in the library there.
Okay.
The Wilderness Walk Within, maybe.
Okay. Well, that's probably what you are about to hear on KRFY, and then we'll continue with Otto's Eclectic Mix after Bird Note at 9 o'clock. Thank you, Phil and Mark, for talking at length now about the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
Thank you.
And happy 20th anniversary.
Yes, thank you.